We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
And the pitcher, a 12-game winner already this year, Steve Stone.
Former American League Cy Young Award winner. Over four decades of excellence in the booth. No one breaks down baseball like Stoney.
Aloy doesn't have a stroke yet, but it only needs one at-bat to come to him. Like that.
Oh, Aloy Jimenez! Welcome back! Hi, Mom! See you later, 5-3!
It's Aloy's night anyway, and you figured he was going to get good pitch to hit. He got a slider up, and I mean, he hit the daylights out of that.
Steve Stone with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to Steve Stone, and all our guests appear on the Busey Bank Score Hotline, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good this morning, and you guys are calling me again. I thought this would be a much rosier week. It's got a little bit better during the time that we've talked last, but not quite where the Sox want to be.
Well, I think the rosiest story of all was yesterday seeing Liam Hendricks back on the bump. And just everything about that, the crowd, the way they reacted, the people that supported him, the video, his emotional reaction, his wife talking to the media, and just she was fantastic. It was hysterical. I think she called him a goofy, random man, which is, you know, that's as much an act of love as anything you're going to hear. that transcends the game, and it was a glorious and great moment.
Well, it was a great night to be at the ballpark. It was a great night to be associated with one of the really wonderful stories of this baseball season. Liam coming back as quickly as he came back. I don't know if anybody could have conceived that he would go through all the treatment he went through. I mean, as you know, chemo is very difficult, and the result is one of those things that you really can't predict. And Liam is back throwing baseballs in a major league game, averaging over 96 miles an hour. Her fastest pitch was over 96 miles an hour. So I was pretty happy with the fact that he got back as quickly as he did. I think people have to realize, however, that it's not going to be the Liam of old for a while yet. He's going to go through some difficult times on the mound. Last night was one of those nights where one pitch might have told the difference. It was a strike three that wasn't called, and then Theis came up with a base hit. So I think Liam will not be used in the closer role to start with until he gets his sea legs. And I think it's not going to be too long before he's back being the guy that was one of the dominant closers in baseball. But you're right. The story does transcend baseball because it's a story of life and death. It's a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's pretty serious stuff. And he promised, I mean, his goal was to be back before June 1st. And of the many goals that he's accomplished throughout this treatment, that was one of the goals he was able to reach.
Just remarkable. You're right. It was the highlight of the season and inspiration to so many, Steve. And you related a conversation you had with Liam Hendricks' parents in Detroit. Just wondered if you could share that and what you took away from that conversation.
Well, number one, I was kind of surprised to be standing out front of the hotel And I saw these two folks walk up, and they said to me that they were Liam's parents. And we started talking. I told them that they had a really wonderful son, that they had a guy that was not only a great performer, but a really interesting personality. And then we talked about a little bit about the family background. And there was a lot of people in their family who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm. And as we all know, if that's in your genetic blueprint, regardless of what it is, you're a product of your family history. And whatever it is your family has endured, you're probably in line, not guaranteeing you're going to get it, but your chances of getting it are pretty good. And they were mentioning three or four different people who had it in their family. And so it wasn't, in the grand scheme of things, surprising. But fortunately, he's an astonishingly strong guy. And he battled his way through, and we talked a little bit about them coming to Detroit. They were hoping they were able to see him being activated and pitch in Detroit. Didn't work out that way because he still had a sideline that he had to throw, and they couldn't have activated him then. So it worked out really well. But they were really nice people, really interesting people, and you know, it was about a 10-minute conversation. It was really a good one. And it showed, just looking at them and talking with them, it kind of showed a little bit how Liam got to be where he's been and got to be who he is, because he really has wonderful parents.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it is, there's part of me that wishes that you could put it in context of like a really great season, because it was like such a special moment. It's by far the biggest moment, and you know, we know what it means, but I wish that there was more of a hierarchy to the bullpen, a place for him to fit in more, because it seems like this season is slipping away quickly. And we heard Rick Hahn, and he took Memorial Day and he turned it into the 4th of July. And so it's almost like the division allows you to buy time. But, man, at some point, they're going to have to put together some wins. They're going to have to start winning on the road, winning in Kansas City, winning in Detroit. It's just a downer that they're in the position they're in.
Well, they richly deserve to be in the position they're in, because they played very poor baseball. They're 10-20 on the road. The team just hasn't gotten it together. But that's reality. I mean, that's what we have. That's what this team is dealing with. That doesn't mean it has to be that way going forward. But there's a few things that jump out at you. Number one is, and I listened to Rick yesterday. I heard a lot of things that he said. He understands exactly where the team is. And he says, you know, if we're in the same place right on July 4th, we have to reevaluate. But before we get to July 4th, the reality is that they're playing some big boy teams in June. They're playing some teams that can really play. They've got the Angels. This is the entree to June. They've got the Angels now for three, as we know, losing the first game of the series. Detroit comes in for three, and that's a team the Sox lost 3 or 4 to in Detroit, could have easily split but didn't. Then they go to New York, and the Yankees and Aaron Judge specifically are starting to heat it up. Miami comes to town. They've got superlative pitching, and they're a tough team to beat. Then you go to Los Angeles and Seattle. The Dodgers, as we know, are always tough, and Seattle is starting to play really, really solid baseball. Julio Rodriguez is hitting everything in sight, and he's one of the best young players in the game. Then Texas comes to town, and Texas is dominating, for the moment, a very good Houston team. I mean, Texas has a run differential of 128. Then Boston comes to town. Then you go back to Anaheim, and you play the Angels for four games. That pretty much is the month of June. And so before you get to July 4th, this team's going to have a month of decision. They've got to start picking it up, because they're playing really strong baseball teams who look to crush lesser teams. I mean, look what they're doing to Oakland this year. Oakland is getting eviscerated by most ball clubs. They're sitting there at 11-45, and pretty much anybody that plays them, they figure they should sweep the series. Well, the Sox are one of those teams at this point that is not dominating many times some lesser competition, But now the lesser competition is off the schedule, and now you go after some really good teams. I look around the ball club, and I see pretty good talent at every position. I mean, I see guys who can hit, guys who can play defense, certainly guys who can pitch. I mean, you see, you hope there's a slot in the bullpen. The bullpen has been magnificent. I mean, Santos has been great. Middleton has been great. Kelly's been great. Graveman has been great. That bullpen is solid right now. Liam's going to fit in when he can rightfully take his spot at the closer at the back end. But the problem has not been the bullpen. The bullpen hasn't given up much. The problem has been they have the highest chase rate in the major leagues right now. I mean, you go back to that fourth game in Detroit, that game that was easily winnable, and now you're in the 10th inning. Okay, we could debate what happened in the ninth, but that's not the issue. You go to the 10th inning, and Alex Lang comes in the game, and he threw one strike in the inning. He went 1-2-3, a couple of strikeouts and a fly ball, and threw one strike. And that is what is characterized this ball club so far. The chase rate is in the neighborhood of 33%. I don't know what exactly, but it's up there. You can't keep swinging at pitches out of the zone consistently and expect to put together a lot of offense. And right now, this team is slightly behind Oakland offensively in batting average. I mean, it's a team now that's reassembled, which gives you hope. Eloy in the middle of this lineup is something that is very positive. I mean, we've seen Eloy starting to drive in runs. He's got a hitting streak going. It's up to, I believe it's up to 10 games. But this is a guy that can turn things around, can carry a ball club by himself, and the Sox are hoping that he can do that. He's also played a pretty decent right field in the two games he's played out there and says he's much more comfortable out there. But this is a team now that has talked and talked about the fact that they believe they're better. Now it's time to show all these teams in the major leagues that they are better, because this is a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately league. This is – nobody's going to feel sorry for you. They're going to go out to beat your brains out on a daily basis. And it's time for the Sox to start to put it together, because if not, well, then you have to think about a lot of other alternatives. And I don't think the Sox want to do that just yet.
I agree with that. Steve, over the weekend, Ozzie Guillen created quite a stir by commenting on Lance Lynn's reaction, which was a negative, obvious reaction to Yoan Moncada misplaying a ground ball. And he called him out on the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago. Just curious what your reaction was to that. But more importantly, I'm curious what you think. Is that something that Pedro Grifol addresses behind closed doors? Do you think that bothered Pedro Grifol as much as it did some people watching?
Well, I have absolutely no reaction to that. And as far as how Pedro runs a team, I think Pedro does not leave anything sit. I think Pedro, and I've said this before on your show and other shows, I think Pedro's going to be a very good manager. And I think he's got a really good sense of what good baseball looks like. And, you know, you start to criticize physical errors, and that becomes a problem, because then when you give up a home run, then somebody criticizes you. Everybody wants to field every ball. Everybody wants to get a hit every time up. Everybody wants to make every good pitch when they have to make a good pitch. But the reality of this game is you're playing against the best players in the world. And this is a really tough game. This is not an easy game. If it was easy, everybody would be in the major leagues. And as we know, they're not. At any one given time, there's 26 players on 30 teams. You know, you're talking about in the neighborhood, you're talking about 780 players. These are the best players in the world. And they're trying to do the best they can on a daily basis, but they don't get it done sometimes. And so, you know, you can criticize the mental aspect, mental mistakes or things along those lines, guys not doing what they should be doing or preparing for a given play at a given time. But the physical errors, the giving up of base hits, the giving up of home runs, the walking leadoff hitters in an inning, these are things that nobody plans on doing. They just happen. If a pitcher could throw the ball everywhere they wanted to on every pitch, a guy that was batting 100 would lead baseball. They would lead the league. That isn't the case. Pitchers make mistakes. Hitters take advantage of it. Pitchers make bad pitches, and hitters get themselves out. Fielders want to field every ball. They miss some of them. They don't miss a lot of them, but they miss some of them.
But I don't mean you're reacting to Moncada misplaying the ball. That happens. My question is, what was your reaction to the reaction by Lance Lynn in showing up a teammate?
Oh, David, I know exactly what your question was, and my answer stands. I have no reaction.
What went wrong with Michael Kopech? I thought he had two of the best games I've seen from him, and I thought he was – they figured something out, and then you see what happens yesterday. And, it, you know, I didn't think he was – he just couldn't find the strike zone. It was crazy. And then the hitting Ohtani, then the home runs in the first inning, it just put him in a hole. And you know, it was extraordinary he actually lasted as long as he did, and he hit 100 pitches, whatever it was, 4 1/3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it's unrealistic to assume that every time out, the last two times in 15 innings, he gave up 3 hits. That's not sustainable. Nobody's that good. But Michael is good enough to give you a good timeout every timeout. He just made some bad pitches in the first inning. Nobody's immune to that. So I still like Michael Kopech's stuff. He had a bad inning. Everybody has a bad inning. We've talked about that. But the fact was, after getting touched up for 4 1/1, he came back and he got that game into the fifth inning and didn't give up another run. So the bounce back was good. I mean, for 3 games, his ERA was under 1. It's not going to happen all that often. I mean, you know, this is still a guy, innings-wise, still a young pitcher in the game. And I think Michael is on the way to having a very good season. I mean, his stuff recently has been really good. And so, look, Mully, you can't believe that he's going to have that kind of dominance every time out. It doesn't work that way.
But it's fun to see, Steve. I mean, it was joyous.
Yeah. Well, what I loved to see was him competing against 2 guys in the middle of that lineup that have a chance to be 2 of the greatest players in our game, and that's Trout and Ohtani.
Right.
And, you know, you're going to face him back-to-back. That's pretty tough. One of the things that we saw last night in that game was the game wasn't turned around by that 4-run first inning. The game was actually won in a way that you'd never thought the game could be won. And the game was actually won on defense by Zach Neto at shortstop. He had a couple of plays that were absolutely phenomenal. And it shows you that you don't always have to win games by swinging the bat, hitting the ball out of the ballpark. The Sox hit 3 home runs. Unfortunately, there were no walks ahead of them, so they were solo shots. But Neto's play, and he made 2 of them, but the one that ended the ball game was just spectacular. It was like a quarterback looking for reads. He came up, made a stop that nobody thought he would make, looked at third base, and then had the presence of mind to realize that it was Grandal running and threw to first base, got him by plenty. So his defense actually helped turn that game around, because if that ball gets through, this is a completely different game. I mean, the Sox then are knocking at the door. There's a lot of pressure in that inning. As it turned out, it didn't work out that way. And, David, sorry for calling you Michael, but I get a little excited about things every now and then. Nobody is really happy with what the Sox are doing right now, but finger pointing and doing a whole lot of things like that, maybe not the greatest way to go about it.
No problem, Steve. So you just come back from Detroit, and the Tigers have Zach McKinstry having a pretty good year. And, you know, Cub fans are noticing, because that's what fans of teams do. He shared with you what the difference is in his approach this year that might be making as much of an impact as anything. Could you share with us what he told you?
Well, look, one of the things that was important for him was that he's getting a chance to play every day. And even though it's different positions, his bat is in the lineup each and every day. He's a left-hand hitter, and he's a guy that has gotten his opportunity with Detroit. What he felt with the Cubs was that they wanted him to hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, and you know that if you're capable of hitting the ball out of the ballpark, most teams want to do that. I remember, and you remember, the guy that went to the Hall of Fame, Ryan Sandberg. Jim Frey said to him, after he had won an MVP, he said, hey, look, you can hit a lot of home runs. You just have to change your stance and your style. And Rhino then became, you know, a fairly prolific home run hitter. McKinstry isn't that guy. McKinstry is one of those guys that can hit home runs, but he's one of those guys that is most effective when he uses the whole field. And so he felt much more comfortable coming to Detroit, and much more comfortable maybe because that is very close to where he went to college, very close to where he has a lot of friends and family, and they do come to games. You get a chance to see him play. He's getting his opportunity and making the most of it. He's a very valuable guy for that team right now, because A.J. Hinch can put him anywhere and put him in that lineup wherever he wants to, and he does a really good job. And leading off, he's been terrific for them. But I think we all saw how effective he can be. And, yeah, he's one of the main cogs on that Tiger team right now that's in second place. That team is only two games behind Minnesota. They're playing good, solid baseball. I don't think they have the starting pitching to hold up. But if Scoogle comes back and does what I think he can do with the, you know, a young lefty with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, that team suddenly looks a whole lot better. So don't write off the Tigers just yet. That division for them is the same division it is for the Sox, who have played at times abysmally, but find themselves just seven back. The Tigers are just two back. McKinstry's a big part of that right now.
Steve, Lucas Giolito back on the bump, and he has been very good this year. And yet his last time out was rough. I think he worked a season low 3 2/3, and he's been consistently getting six innings, and he's been very good. What do you expect to see from him tonight?
I expect a bounce back because his family is here. I saw his brother. I saw his mother after the game. His uncle is coming in. They're wonderful people. They're showbiz people.
Right.
His mother was in a lot of series years back. Lindsay Frost, it's really a great family. Getting to know them and seeing them when I go to Anaheim has been something that's really nice. I understand where Lucas gets it. Lucas is a very cerebral guy, and I expect a big bounce back. You know, he said the seven walks, he said, well, that's unacceptable, and it certainly is. I haven't seen him like that. I mean, he was missing up and out of the zone. Right. He had no conception where to throw that fastball. It was one of those days that you stand on the mound and sometimes that plate looks like it's moving on you and there's really not much you can do. He's able usually to make corrections during the course of the game, and he wasn't able to do it. Ethan Katz, who had him in high school, knows exactly what he's doing and not doing, and he went out there a couple of times and tried to get him back on track. Sometimes your body won't cooperate, but with his family here, I'm thinking, you know, he'll have a pretty good one tonight. This is still a pretty good Angel team who knows they really have their work cut out for them, despite the fact that they're 3 over .500. They're sitting there six games back of Texas, and also in a division where they've got Seattle right behind them a half game. That's a really tough division in the West. And the Angels are playing for a couple of different things, guys. That's why they'll be really tough in this series and really tough when we see them in Anaheim. They're playing to get into the playoffs. And they're playing thinking that if they get in the playoffs, maybe they can sign Ohtani. That is a big deal out there because he draws fans. He's the best player in the game. I mean, I've heard various people speculate on who's the best player in baseball. They say this guy's the best player, that guy's the best player. Look, the best player in baseball, hands down, is Ohtani because he's dominant as a pitcher. He's dominant as a hitter. He can steal bases. He hits the ball as far as just about anybody in the game. He is a unicorn. I mean, you didn't think a guy like that existed, but we're getting a chance to see him at the ballpark. And look, guys, you know, and you have a great listening audience. If you get a chance to see him, you don't know how many times you're going to get a chance to see him live. But it's like seeing Michael Jordan in his prime. You're watching Babe Ruth here, maybe a little bit better, only in that he pitches at the same time that he's hitting. You should come out the next couple of ball games and get a chance to see him because he's truly a special player.
Great stuff, Steve. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with you.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, boys. Take care. Have a good rest of the show, and I'll talk to you in a week, and hopefully things will be a bit brighter.
That's a plan. Let's get that done.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.